Welcome to episode 15, Trade Deadline Day. I got my good friend Jaydeep Kanungo here. We're going to run through the trade deadline and talk about the NHL landscape going forward leading up to the playoffs and the heated playoff races in the West and the East. Okay, Jaydeep, we're deadline day at 6 p.m. Pacific on February 25th, 2019. Thanks for joining me on this deadline day. I've been tracking the trades all day, and we can talk about the trades that have happened and talk about the who we think won the deals. So what was your kind of stood out to you over the day watching the news?
I actually didn't stay glued to my phone or to the television today, which is actually kind of nice because it seemed like there was a massive lull and things were quite boring up until like 30 minutes before the deadline.
Yeah.
So I was kind of glad I had more productive things to do than sort of.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like when you have it on your phone, you can check Twitter and you can check like the trade tracker. Like it's just as good as watching on TV. Like I wouldn't mind if I had like the day off, just kind of lounge, and then you're just lounging anyway, following whatever. And I'll probably go watch some of the videos, but I agree, it's lost some of its luster, the trade deadline. Like,
yeah, it's pretty amazing how teams do all this kind of business at the very last minute. You know, they're committing to Mark Stone, which we'll talk about, for 8 years.
Yeah.
I guess it's not official yet, but it sounds like it will be official.
Yeah, pretty much.
But they commit to this like in a 30-minute period.
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing? What are they doing for... You know,
but is it just negotiating tactic, right? Yeah. Because if you look at the CBA type stuff, they go even further with the strikeouts and with the lockouts and whatnot. And I think it's part of the negotiation.
But for sure, things kind of get like the urgency definitely ramps up in the last few minutes, I'm sure. And then that's sort of when, especially a team like Ottawa can really make that decision. Like, okay, this is a true deadline. Let's make a decision.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of funny to me that teams are making decisions for the next 8 years, and it comes down to like 30 minutes before the deadline. But that said, I think all the guys that people thought would move moved. It took a while for that to actually happen. And I think there's definitely teams, especially in the West, that sort of reinforced themselves and that are now, you know, legitimate contenders.
Yeah, and that's a good point because I did notice that a lot of the like big name guys on the top 10 list for the trade deadline were landing on West Coast teams, right? So
yeah,
I think maybe this the West is going to be a battle, and it'll be interesting because, you know, the East has won the last three cups, right? So the West maybe is loading up because they want to bring it back to the West type situation.
Yeah, and I guess in the East, Tampa's clearly the runaway, and they didn't actually make any moves.
Yeah.
But they're so far ahead that you can just sort of see every team trying to like get up to that level. Whereas Tampa, you know, they don't really need to make a move to sort of disrupt their chemistry. You know, I think making trade deadline moves are a little bit overrated because, you know, you got this player coming into your team. You don't know how he's going to fit in. Some of the trades today, that will be one of the question marks, I think, going forward. So
yeah.
I'm sure as we talk about each individual trade, we can discuss some of those factors.
Yeah, so let's get into it. I think the biggest trade and the biggest name was Mark Stone landing in Vegas, along with Tobias Lindberg. Going back to Ottawa is grade A plus prospect. We've spoken about him on the pod before. Eric Brandstrom is going back. And then they got Oscar Lindberg, and they got a 2020 second round pick from Dallas that Vegas owned as well. So I guess looking at it from Vegas's side, looking back on the expansion draft and how things kind of shook out, they were able to, like, they still have Cody Glass, their first pick, but they were able to acquire two first-round picks in Nick Suzuki and Eric Brandstrom. And so now they've kind of collected these assets, and they've turned those two assets into Pacioretty and now Stone. So, and they've reportedly given him a big deal of 9.5 for 8 years that it's going to be agreed upon. So yeah, for Vegas' side, my take is that, I mean, it makes sense to get Stone. He's a very good player and you can lock him up long-term, but rapidly their clean books are getting full. So I'm not saying any of these guys are necessarily that bad. I mean, Pacioretty we've spoken about before, but even if one of those contracts ends up being really bad, they could get hamstrung a bit here. So, and I'm a huge fan of Eric Brandstrom. This is a massive win for the Ottawa Senators. We saw Pierre Dorion in Vancouver at the World Juniors. I would have expected him to be in Victoria because that's where Sweden was playing all its games. But clearly he's had his eye on him. And if I was a Sens fan, the idea of having Brännström and Chabot as my top pair type thing in the power play going into the future, I mean, that's pretty exciting. So, I mean, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting strategy by the Golden Knights. So they're clearly, not in it for the long. I mean, they're probably
in it for so much win now. Yeah, like, you thought they were going to take their time, and it's totally not been the case.
So they're three first rounders. You only have one left from their original draft.
Yeah,
it's Cody Glass. And then if you remember last year, they made the deal for Tatar last year.
Yeah.
They traded a first, second, and third.
Yeah, and that was a desperation last-minute deadline.
Yeah, and then they flipped him. So, I think Vegas clearly sort of sees the benefit of trying to win now. This clearly captivated their market, and they feel that they have a good enough team to do it. And I think if you look at – I think some of the analytics have been quite favorable about the Golden Knights.
Yeah.
So – I think they can win right now. It's a bit of a steep price in the sense that I think Erik Brännström is their best prospect. He gives you that ability to play from your own end and break out and make clean zone entries. He's clearly a puck-moving defenseman. It's interesting. I thought that this was a clear slam dunk win. Or not win, but a good trade for the Senators. But then I was reading a little bit about Erik Brännström, and some scouts are saying that, he's quite small. Like, he's only like 5'10". Mm-hmm. And some people sort of question whether he's sort of like a first pairing type defenseman mm-hmm. at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. And I think right now in the AHL, like, it's not too bad. I guess he's played 41 games right now in the AHL this year. He's got 28 points.
That's pretty good as a 19-year-old defenseman who is undersized, as you say. And I think he's actually very strong, like, on the lower body strength. He just has a lower center of gravity, and he's really good at kind of angling people off. I mean, for sure, it's something he's got to get over because, you know, he's doing it in the AHL right now. And I think his plus minus is like close to zero. Like, he's not really getting caved in the AHL, which I think is a good sign and kind of buoys that comment that that he can't necessarily play. And the thing is, too, consider that he doesn't have to be a number one. Thomas Chabot is a stud. He's a number one, right? So if he's a number two, and I think just the power play, he could magic, right?
Yeah,
and
it seems to be a real creative.
So I don't know if he's necessarily that number one, like, Norris type guy, but I think he's a high offensive skill type player, and I think he might be underrated. There's a kind of a wave of smaller defensemen with offensive ability in the NHL, and I think he's a poster child for that.
Yeah, I think what I was reading a little bit as well is that people thought that based on the return that the Sens got for Matt Duchene, so with Duchene, they got a first rounder.
Let's talk about that trade. Yeah,
they got a conditional, like, possible first rounder if Duchene resigns in Columbus.
Yeah,
and then they got Vitaly
Abramov,
who's
the Russian
right now,
and Jonathan Davidson as well.
Yeah, Jonathan Davidson as well. So some people thought that the fact that they got a definite first rounder, another potential first rounder, especially if Duchene re-signs, that based on that offer, they maybe should have gotten a little bit more from Vegas, because they only ended up getting a second, I think, from Vegas.
Yeah,
second. And what's interesting is that people leading up to the deadline said Mark Stone is unequivocally the best player available mm-hmm. because of his versatility, the fact that he plays a really good two-way game. Everyone just raves about how he's like a perfect guy to coach. He'll play whatever role. He kills penalties. I would have thought that he may have gotten like slam dunk more, like a better, more quantity exchange than what Duchene got. Mm-hmm. But that said, I mean, Vegas did give up their number one prospect, and that's probably what the difference was. Because if you look at the other deals that they made, going back to like Carlson and Hoffman, mm-hmm. they really didn't get much back in the way of like elite prospects. Mm-hmm. And I guess Brännström was the one elite guy that they got back for trading all those guys. So.
Yeah, and I think, like, Abramov, I think he was a little bit lower on the list for Columbus's prospects, so you're not getting their grade-A guy. And, yeah, sure, the Cody Glass is still probably number one for Vegas. But I think that's the thing. Would you rather have Brännström, who has already played, he's in his second year after being drafted, and he's showing so well in the AHL. He was a first-round pick. He was a top 15 pick, if my memory serves me right. I'd rather have him than two first rounders, because when you have two first rounders, you hope one of those first rounders is going to turn into Brännström. So I think I see what your point is, but it's like with Brännström, I'd much rather have Brännström than the uncertainty of a first round pick.
Yeah.
And Abramov, like he's not very fast, and he has that offensive ability. He played for Gatineau in the Quebec Major Junior League, so the Sens should know him well. And I could see Ottawa, kind of bringing the most out of them because they do develop prospects well. It's interesting. It seems like they've had a bit of a moratorium on Russian players. I was reading an article on The Athletic about that. And so Abramov's one of the rare Russians that they brought into the organization. But I think they got a lot of quantity in some of these other deals that they had with the Duchesne deal. They got the first-round picks.
Yeah, they definitely
They have three first-round picks next year. So they have a lot of they have second round picks. So getting Brännström makes sense, but yeah, maybe just for equality's sake, I think it does make it fair. But I think Stone was a little bit overhyped. Like, why is he so much more valued than Duchesne? I know he's like a good two way player,
yeah.
But Duchesne is a center, right? Traditionally, a center would be more valuable.
Yeah, I think the thing with Mark Stone is that he his defensive game, they say, is sort of sulky. If he played on a contending team, they say he'd be sort of a sulky type, like Yuri Lehtinen type.
If he's a Marian Hossa type, like I think that's a better comparison. Because he does have 70-point potential. He's not a slouch.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of people sort of rave about his intangibles as well. Like, they're like, oh, are the Sens going to name him captain, like, within, you know, later today?
Yeah.
If they would have signed him, right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of teams value that.
And I think even Keith Tkachuk was commenting that he wanted Stone to stay because he's been a huge influence on Brady this season.
Yeah. I think the other thing with Ottawa, they sort of have like a little bit of a Montreal Expos type of feel to them right now, I would say. Like, they've got, these guys.
Wow. They're going to get moved, are you saying?
Well, they've got a very, like, they've got tons of prospects now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, not all of them are going to hit. But then some of them, they've got, like, decent prospects. And, you know, none of them are, like, you know, top five of the draft type. But they've got so many that some of them are going to become Stone or Hoffman.
There you go. Mark Stone. Well, look at what Mark Stone was.
Yeah, Mark Stone was like a sixth round draft pick, right? Mm-hmm. And you sort of see like what they've been able to do with that and turn them into this boon of prospects and picks. I think all things considered, Pierre Dorion probably did a decent job.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? I think with Ryan Duchesne, Matt Duchesne, there's some rumors as to whether he would he could potentially go back to Ottawa. I think it's hard though. Like, you know, after you sort of taste playoffs with another team, it's sort of hard to go back to a place like Ottawa. But, you know, if they can sort of re-sign Duchesne, then they would have really cashed in on that. Mm-hmm. Stone, of course, re-signed in Vegas. Mm-hmm. I guess we can talk a little bit from the Vegas perspective as well. So I think Mark Stone's a really great acquisition for them. He like literally can play any role that Vegas wants to put him out on. And I think they're going to play either Calgary or San Jose in the first round. That's going to be like a really like cagey type of affair. Cause I think all three of those teams are well-balanced and they're going to be really tight games. So if you can put Mark Stone out there, play him in any situation, feel comfortable that he's going to win in any situation, almost like a Patrice Bergeron, although Bergeron plays center.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge, win for the Golden Knights.
And it's interesting looking at Vegas, like again, looking back to the expansion where they are now, a lot of their good players are in that 25 to 26 age range or 25 to 30. With looking at their top six, they have, you know, Marchessault, Riley Smith, they have Stastny. William Karlsson, Stastny. He's kind of like in his quote unquote prime of his career, I guess the old prime. And then they have Pacioretty now at Stone. So they're not throwing in young prospects into the fire like people kind of thought.
And I guess they would have traded their first rounder last year, right, as part of the Tatar deal.
Yeah. I think they might have another pick still from the expansion still. I think they loaded up for 2 years.
Well, yeah. I suppose like if you're making three picks in the first round in your first year, that's going to be assets that you can use in subsequent years. And that's probably, maybe that's what they sort of planned. I don't know if they planned on it. They definitely sort of over-exceeded everyone's expectations.
Yeah. But I guess they're saying they don't really need Brännström. I was kind of thinking they needed Brännström for the power play because they don't really have somebody who's really excelling with that. But I guess Colin Miller and Nate Schmidt are doing a really good, a good enough job for them offensively from the back end. They didn't need Brännström. So, yeah, I think Vegas, I mean, I personally don't want them to win very much. I want them to lose. And I think Stone's a great player, though. Yeah. And at the end of the day, Brännström wasn't in the lineup, and there was no guarantee he was going to be in the lineup this year. And if they're all about playoffs, they literally just added Stone for a guy who's not even in the lineup.
Do you think Brännström plays for Ottawa this year?
I'm kind of hoping, because I'm a fan of his and I just want to see like what he could do.
Yeah.
Why not? Just throw him in there.
I mean, you look at the Ottawa lineup right now. I heard that other than Cody Ceci, they don't have a single defenseman making more than $1 million.
Oh,
like,
really?
Thomas Chabot's like making 900,000.
Oh, wow.
So other than Ceci, who's making, you know, a normal amount, because he's a veteran.
Yeah.
Their whole defense is on either entry-level deals or very cheap deals.
Wow. So Melnick is getting what he wants with that, right?
Yeah, they're a very lean team. And I think, you know, the one thing you can sort of credit Pierre Dorion for is, I mean, it's horrible that this Duchesne deal cost them a first round this year.
Mm.
But with this whole narrative that's sort of been circling, I think he's actually done well to sort of say that, look, we've got some players coming up, we've got some prospects and picks coming up, just hang tight. And, you know, for a team that didn't seem to have much hope at the beginning of the year, I think he sort of cashed in a little bit on the guys that probably would have lost for nothing anyways.
Yeah, so I think, it's a lot of good discussion about Ottawa. I'll just kind of talk about a few more trades here. So another trade that they did was they traded Ryan DeZingle for Anthony Duclair and a second round pick in 2020 and a second round pick in 2021. So there you go. They're stockpiling on the picks. And then I'll just sort of bring in Columbus into the mix here. And so Columbus traded for Keith Kincaid, another goalie, for a fifth round pick in 2022. People are trading 2022 picks here.
Yeah. So that's been interesting.
Columbus is very interesting. So they also got, got Adam McQuaid for Julius Bergman and a 2019 fourth and a 2019 seventh. So that basically puts Columbus in a spot where they only have two picks in this year's draft, and they are just going for it. And I think, you know, it's an interesting story. Like, DeZingle, I think, is good. That's a bit of an overpay, in my opinion, for 2 seconds when a guy like, you know, Johansson, who we can talk about, went for a second and a fourth, or Simmons went for a fourth, which is like a conditional third. But DeZingle's getting 2 seconds. Like, I think Ottawa did really well to kind of elevate him in the lineup and get his numbers up there.
Yeah,
and
maybe
pump and dump type situation.
Maybe Matt Duchesne sort of had a role in making that deal as well, because they had good chemistry. And
True. So you have a ready-made line you can kind of add to the lineup.
Well, there's just something they sort of recognized after the fact.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, maybe we can, because DeZingle like is sort of having an outlier. Like, I don't know how
good it's an outlier. It's like a Patrick Eves like 2 years ago at the deadline.
But it seems like they're, in spite of the Senators not playing very well, they're actually having decent years.
Yeah.
So maybe they want to bring them. Actually, I had heard that Columbus had considered bringing all three in.
Stone, I heard that too, like a package
and
deal.
Duchesne, and they have the cap space, I guess, to have worked it out for this year. So they're clearly all in. I mean, it is kind of funny though with Columbus, because like they're no guarantee right now to still make the playoffs.
Like where are they in the standings?
So right now they're at 70. So as we speak tonight on February 25th, they're at 73 points with 21 games left. They are a point up on Pittsburgh for third place in the Metropolitan Division. Pittsburgh's got 72 points. And I guess the two wildcard teams, Montreal Canadiens, 73 points. Carolina's got 72 points. So it's going to be a dogfight. I mean, I think one of the tough things you always wonder when teams make such drastic changes is whether all these pieces are going to fit in or whether it's going to be just a bad chemistry experiment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would think just based on these deals that they probably have like quality NHL players now playing in these positions that they should be able to get through. But, you know, it is quite risky. And even with these additions, are they still like good enough to beat Washington?
Washington.
I mean, you could argue maybe they are. They fell like
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Pittsburgh. I mean, that's sort of a bugaboo team for them always in the playoffs. And I guess the Islanders are a little bit of a surprise this year as well. But, you know, does this put them, do you think this makes them the favorites in the Metropolitan, at least to get out from that?
I mean, I don't necessarily think so. Like, I think Columbus, it's an interesting story. Like, there might be some off-ice issues kind of impacting this. So just kind of looking at their depth chart, you know, it doesn't scream at me that they're better than Tampa or they're better than Nashville. They're better, you know, in terms of forward group, at least than Toronto. And, you know, their defense still, people were talking about maybe they need to add a defenseman to this lineup. They really just added forwards up front. So I think, like, they did well, but as you say, like, they could miss the playoffs. Duchesne, Panarin, and Bobrovsky, arguably, like, their the three best players right now, not, I guess, including Jones is a workhorse back there, and I'm a big fan of Werenski. So they do have pieces to go into the future, but now they've traded all these picks in this year's draft. Like, one factor that I do get is that they haven't won a playoff round in their entire club history. So if they know Panarin and Rossi are out the door, they know either way they're on the path for a rebuild. At least they traded this year's like first round pick, right? So I guess next year too. So if they're like a crater next year, then it could be real bad for them.
Well, can you imagine if I want you to expand on your point there, but just imagine that they do re-sign Duchesne,
yeah,
and end up giving up first rounder to Ottawa,
yeah,
and then Panarin and Bobrovsky leave, and Columbus,
and then
like,
they crater and Duchesne on a terrible team once again.
Yeah, so that would be kind of like the most,
the third time this guy, like, what if they lose all three of them? Then they don't have any of their picks. Like Pierre-Luc Dubois is gonna have to like carry these guys like on his back. I don't know how he's gonna do it.
Yeah,
and is Ingles a free agent too? Isn't he?
Yeah,
that was the whole idea, right? So they're going to be absolutely gutted, and I think they have some prospects, but nobody who's not that many, like that much depth or anything. So I think it's a big risk. So there's the fact. So I do get it because they haven't won a round. So they think they might suck anyway. So they might as well just, you know, go for it while they have a shot. The other is Jarmo Kekalainen, and I'm not an insider by any stretch, but is Kekalainen on the hot seat here? Because he's kind of acting like it, like just kind of going all the balls out. But maybe he's not on the hot seat, and this is just organization-wide. They're like, no, we have to go for it.
Right, yeah, now. I mean, I think this is a team that they've been in the league now for almost 20 years. I think 1999, 2000, thereabouts. So, and they've never won a playoff round.
So yeah, so I get that.
Yeah, I can sort of see you want to change the narrative around your organization.
Yeah.
And who knows? I think if you win a playoff round, Columbus is like a big college town.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe Bobrovsky and Panarin see like, actually, this is a really good place to play, and they'll convince them to
I stay. Doubt it. Like, getting the city like fired up for 2 weeks is going to all of a sudden change their entire opinion on the city.
Well,
I think
maybe
Duchesne, as you say, and they've been always searching for that first line center that's been elusive for them, even back to the Rick Nash days. And then they had Ryan Johansson, but I think they wisely traded him for Seth Jones. So Duchesne could be that perfect fit if they like signed him. But I mean, if I'm Duchesne, looking at this roster without Panarin and Bobrovsky, I mean, I'd be kind of worried that I'm going to get right back into another rebuild. And these guys don't even have picks.
Yeah, it's a pretty volatile situation. It's like a boomer bust type situation.
Like, it could go really bad. And then say they win a round, okay? So they have a history books, they win a round. Then they absolutely suck next year and the year after. Is the fan base going to, like,
It's a really tough one. I think last year they were up 2-0 on Washington. They went game 3 in overtime, and Washington won on a fluky goal.
Yeah.
And then they rattled off. Washington won 4 straight games and beat the Jackets. I think the Jackets feel like they're right there.
Yeah, because they took Washington so close, and they won the cup, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they feel like they're right there. And the Metropolitan Division this year, the Islanders are number one. They've been playing exceptional. But it's there for the taking, right? Like, the Capitals, despite Ovechkin's goal scoring, haven't been as good this year. Penguins are sort of on the precipice of missing the playoffs as well. So I think the Metropolitan Division is right there. Whether they have enough to sort of, if they do win the Metro, to get past, you know, the three-headed monster in the Atlantic, that's another question. But I think it's a calculated risk. It could all blow up in front of their face. But I think, just given that this team really has no identity historically, you know, just do it. Just do it for once, you know? Like, there's so many teams that are like, so I was listening to Down Goes Brown, and he was sort of talking about how in baseball nowadays, teams are so afraid to take a risk that if they feel like there's no chance that they're going to win the World Series, that they're just going to load up on prospects. And that was sort of like the Houston Astros model, where they got a lot of first overall picks or like really high picks, and they eventually won the World Series. But now you've got teams that like are afraid to sign any free agent because they feel like, well, that's going to put us in the middle road, right? Like in no man's land in terms of like not good enough to win and not bad enough to get picks. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I kind of hope hockey doesn't go that way, because in hockey you can sort of see like how goaltending, you know, just the fact that certain teams play certain matchups in the playoffs. You know, I think if you've got a good team, just go for it. And I'm kind of glad Kekalainen is doing that.
And especially in hockey, where like underdogs are a lot more common than other sports like basketball or baseball. So I can respect them going for it. I do like the long-term view, so it doesn't really jive with kind of my team building philosophy. But at the same time, if I was building a team for 20 years, spinning my wheels, not getting anything done, and I had a sliver of a window open, you know, maybe I would go for it too. So Columbus will be interesting. It'll be a crash or burn. It's kind of go big or go home type situation with them. But they have been there close every year. I can think back to Washington. Like, I'm kind of surprised when I heard that they haven't won a round, because I felt like they've had some epic playoff battles, especially with like Washington.
Well, Washington last year, they almost did it. Pittsburgh, and they're right there. I think they're a good team. Like, I think they're always competitive. They got guys that, you know, you'd think would be good playoff players, but they just didn't have that extra quality. You know, like Pittsburgh, like you need sort of like these game breakers.
Yeah, exactly.
I think now that they have it right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just give it a whirl. And I think goaltending has also let them down in the playoffs as well.
But imagine, like, wouldn't the funniest situation be that they just missed the playoffs entirely? Yeah. And then Duchesne misses the playoffs again. Yeah. And then all these guys leave. And then, like, I don't know, is that like the end of the franchise? Just fold the franchise at that point.
Ship it to
Quebec City or something.
Yeah. I mean,
they have a pretty good fan base. It seems like they have a good atmosphere. So I'm just joking.
Absolutely,
but,
yeah.
I mean, that would just be really something. So, another deal, talking about the Atlantic, Boston acquired Marcus Johansson for a 2019 second round pick from New Jersey and a 2020 fourth round pick. I thought that was a nice add.
It's a good depth move for them.
Pretty reasonable addition. And Johansson has that playoff experience with the Capitals back in the day. And I think he's a guy that, he's playing with skilled players, he can kind of, you know, hold his own and play well.
For sure. He's like a versatile player. He can play defensive minutes. He can win
power play as well. He has experience
and
in Washington.
He scored some overtime winners, I think, in the playoffs for Washington previously.
The last couple of months he's been playing pretty well. He's been putting up points. I grabbed him in one of my pools, and
yeah, it's kind of
offensive ability.
I think it's a great move for the Bruins. Like, I was sort of afraid that they'd get stoned, and you look at the way the Bruins have been playing lately. They've been reeling off wins. They were on a road trip recently, and they sort of reeled off win after win. And, you know, I was looking at the standings, like, they were actually third in the Atlantic, or even like in the wild card spot. And now they're like so many points ahead of the Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're like a legit contender. And Marcus Johansson just reinforces that. If you can get sort of more depth in the center position, guys that can play any role, that can win draws, that's always a good thing to have.
Yeah, I definitely think Boston, you know, still has Toronto's number as well, and probably psychologically, all those guys, Bergeron, that they have. So
yeah,
interesting.
That's definitely, it seems like that's almost a certainty that that's going to be a first round matchup.
Yeah. And then, so I guess kind of talking about Toronto, they just, you know, acquired Nick Batan today. I think their big deal was the Muzzin, you know, a couple of weeks ago. I thought he was a good ad for them. And then I guess if you consider, I think Leafs fans kind of defending the fact that the Leafs didn't do anything today are like, well, John Tavares is our acquisition that we got on July 1st. We did our work earlier, but yeah, they didn't add a Nyquist or any other kind of depth add. Or people are talking they need that bulk, right? So maybe a Wayne Simmonds would have been a good fit for them, but maybe he doesn't fit that analytics mold that Dubas is on. But, you know, maybe they don't have as much grit as well. So
yeah, I think with Nick Petan, I think it's pretty good. They trade him for Par Lindholm, but Nick Petan's never really figured it out at the NHL level. He's only got like 23 points in 100 games or 105 games or so. But he used to be the CHL leading scorer. I think they're hoping that he just sort of fits in the fourth line and then can just sort of provide some playmaking options.
Yeah, there. Totally a minor deal. And who knows, maybe he'll even go to the minors and help the Marlies replace Sam Gagner. Yeah. So it's a pretty small deal.
And he never got opportunity there in Winnipeg. So maybe in Toronto he's going to get that.
Yeah. So talking about the Jets, so they made a big deal today getting one of the coveted centers. It just seems like every year they have the same problem. They don't have a second line center. Last year they acquired Paul Stastny, and then this year they acquired Kevin Hayes from the New York Rangers for Brendan Lemieux, who they got in that Evander Kane deal with Buffalo years ago. And they also traded their 2019 first round pick, which was well known to be available. It was on even the TSN trade board, and they got a conditional 2022 fourth round pick. I think that's if the Jets win the cup. So they, so Kevin Hayes, I think he's a pretty good player. He's another one of these guys who's kind of on a burner. Like, he's having a above average season for himself. But he was playing a second-line role behind my boy Mika Zibanejad in New York, and he was producing this year. He's kind of a bigger body, so you think he'd do well in playoff hockey. So it makes sense, but, I mean, every year they're trading a first-round pick, and they draft so well they can afford to all the assets they have. But you'd think that they've got to draft, like, a true bona fide center to put behind Scheifele to complete their team. And I don't know if Hayes is a long-term solution, but – you know, if you can put him between Line A and Ehlers, maybe he can, you know, definitely produce in that role.
Yeah, I think he sort of fits everything that Winnipeg needs right now. So it's interesting that I think a lot of Jets fans would probably be disappointed that they didn't get Mark Stone. And
yeah.
And Stone probably, just because he's like a hometown kind of guy and he's, you know, he's clear number one on the trade board, they probably would have preferred him. But Hayes probably fits more on their team than Stone, right?
Because they don't need wingers.
Yeah, they've got a lot of wingers. Granted, not wingers as good as Stone, but I think Hayes is kind of like the Swiss Army knife in terms of what he can do as a centerman. Mm-hmm. So he's been producing. He's sort of producing like career numbers this year with Chris Kreider. And I was just looking up. So, you know, people have been sort of saying, like, is this sustainable? Is he sort of on a heater? His shooting percentage this year is 9.2%. And that's actually well below his career average, about 11 to 12%. So he's actually shooting like his percentages are lower than what they have.
But I wonder what his line mate shooting percentage is.
Yeah, so I think Chris Kreider and him have sort of paired up, and they've been playing well together, I guess. But I think one of the good things about Kevin Hayes is that he can play in any situation. So he can be a power play guy, he can be a penalty kill guy, he can be a guy that can win faceoffs for you. And I think, you know, that's always in those tight games, they'd like to throw out those centers that can win draws. And Hayes is like a 6'5" guy that's going to be able to win draws like that. I think that's a huge gain. And I actually don't think they gave up a lot. Like, Brendan Lemieux is like not that.
Yeah, he's
like
kind
Brendan
of a
Lemieux is like a third
middling
liner.
Prospect.
He's like averaging about 7 minutes of ice time a year this year, a game this year. And
basically just a first for Hayes.
Yeah, like Lemieux, he played a game against Montreal a couple weeks ago and he scored a goal. But I just sort of sense like, you know, classic like pump and dump by the Jets, you know, just give the illusion that he's maybe something worth having.
Yeah.
So I don't really think that's a major piece of the deal. The Jets first rounder as well is going to be like a 28th, 29th type of pick, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be a really high pick. So I think for getting such a versatile player in Kevin Hayes that can sort of play any role for just a first rounder, and they got a fourth rounder, I guess, as well in 2022. I think that's a decent deal for the Jets. And I think it's going to be really hard to play against in the playoffs.
Well, I just think that they need to keep one of these guys. The trade for Stastny, that's great. You know, you're giving up futures. I guess it's just if they plan to just do a rental 2C all year long. And I think like a guy like Line A, he's young. He's kind of had some struggles this year. He's kind of had some cold streaks. Maybe getting a center, a permanent type center you can develop chemistry with, might better suit him over the course of a year rather than going to the deadline and trying to acquire guys. So maybe they could re-sign Hayes and keep him long-term, or maybe they're just keep waiting for Roslovic to be ready to take that role?
Yeah, I mean, they do have some good young players. Like Roslovic, I guess, is their best center.
Yeah, he would probably be the guy that they'd want to step in.
Yeah, and I guess like it's interesting the Jets, for as much as people say that nobody wants to play there, they actually have a lot of Americans on their team. You know, you think about like Wheeler, Dustin Byfuglien.
And he really likes it.
Yeah, and those guys sort of like, you know, they're sort of low key guys. They like the scene there. So I think it's a good move. Like I say, I think some Jets fans may be disappointed they didn't get Stone. I think really the tough thing though in the West is like all these teams made ads, but there's no guarantees anyways. If you make these trades, anything will pan out. But you know, it's one of these teams are gonna, like some of these teams are gonna lose in the first round.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be a bitter pill to swallow.
Yeah, but that's the name of the game, right?
That is the name of the game.
So, kind of the other side of the deal, the Rangers, kind of mentioning another deal they made. They traded Matt Zuccarello to Dallas for a conditional second round pick, a conditional in 2019, and a conditional 2020 third round pick. They can each become a first. One is the second becomes a first if they win two rounds, which they're still in a playoff hunt. And then the third becomes a first if they re-sign Zuccarello. So unfortunately, the other day, Zuccarello played and scored 2 points in the first two periods, and then he broke his arm, so he's out for 4 weeks. So the only way that they're going to get an impact from this deal is if they do make the playoffs and he steps in and can play at that time, because in the stretch run, not going to have him. So Dallas, they also got Ben Lovejoy from New Jersey for Connor Carrick and a 2019 third round pick. But the Rangers, like they were a pretty good team this year. I think they overperformed, and maybe it's smart of the management to not really buy into that and really go all in, but they have kind of sold off the UFA players they have. Zuccarello, I mean, Henrik Lundqvist was really choked up. And I think it's kind of ridiculous how I was listening to some of the radio and they were kind of making fun of the guy for, you know, being choked up. Like, it's his friend. What's his problem here? You know,
yeah,
I think that's a little bit overly macho, you know, that the guy can't be a little bit upset because, you know, his long-term teammate. Maybe he's thinking to himself, we thought we were going to win a cup together. Now he's gone. That's, you know, gone from his.
Although I think Zuccarello would probably go back to the Rangers.
Yeah, he might go back, yeah.
Yeah, like, I think if you walk around, I remember going to a Canadiens game against the Rangers, and there's a bunch of, like, fans from New York that came up for the game, and there's, like, so many Zuccarello jerseys. Like Lundqvist and Zuccarello jerseys.
Because he's that underdog. He's a small guy.
Absolutely, and he's a brilliant, like, such a fun player to watch to cheer for. So who knows, you might end up back with the Rangers, but yeah, that's a really tough blow for Dallas. Like it wasn't that steep of a price, I think, given
the conditional nature.
Yeah, they're kind of conditional, sort of second and third. It's maybe worth a shot. Like, their offense hasn't been very good this year, and he sort of gives them that extra edge. And I guess with the tough thing now with the Stars, if he's gone 4 to 6 weeks, the Stars are like also in a dogfight to make the playoffs. There's like four or five teams sort of fighting for those spots. I mean, they're all kind of mediocre teams.
They're all like backing up into the playoffs as well. Like, it's still wide open for the wild card.
But, you know, there's like four or five teams there, like Wild, the Avalanche, Coyotes, Blackhawks, even the Canucks. Oilers are probably out of it.
My Oilers.
But you know, like, you know how St. Louis went
on
this run.
Which we should put on?
You know, yeah. Oh, yeah, we should put that game on. But yeah, with, you know how St. Louis went on that run?
Yeah.
They really sort of solidified a playoff spot.
Yeah.
Any of these teams can just pass Dallas. And Dallas has sort of been.
And that's all it takes. There's only 20 games left or so. So I think that if one of these teams gets hot, they can get in. But Dallas, yeah, it's going to be I don't know what's going on there. They don't really have too much depth. And basically, yeah, Dallas, it was kind of a tough deal for them. And Zuccarello definitely would have produced, I think, playing with Benner Sagan.
Yeah.
He would have made it happen, and it's kind of sad for them. But, yeah, the Rangers, I think they're definitely retooling. I want to see my boy Mika Zibanejad continue producing. But this gives them a chance to get guys like Elias Anderson and Filip Hedl into the mix and giving them a chance to get some more ice time and play out there. So, yeah, talking about some other deals. So you were mentioning some of the West Coast teams. So one team that, you know, is kind of surprising me lately is the Minnesota Wild. So they made a kind of shocker type trade that, for me. They traded Mikael Granlund, which is, to me, a bona fide first line player. and probably one of their best players. They traded him straight up one for one to the Nashville Predators for Kevin Fiala, who's a 22-year-old young forward. He came on well last year. He was good in the AHL before that, and this year he's kind of struggled. So I like him. I like Fiala as a player. But just straight up for Granlund, I know that the difference in salary is about $4 or $5 million. So Minnesota's saving money there. But it just seems like with Minnesota trading Coyle to the Bruins and trading Granlund, like they're just that kind of wave of top prospects that the Wild had, that they were all kind of, you know, they were top organization in the league. These guys, once they come up, they're going to, you know, lead them through the promised land. It never really panned out that way. And it seems like Minnesota's just like, we need to just move on from this whole experiment, this whole project, this era of our drafting and our history, and just kind of start fresh. So they got a Ryan Donato, they got a Kevin Fiala, and they have some young guys now with Eriksson Ek and Greenway. But I think they kind of take themselves a bit out of it with this trade.
Yeah, I think Minnesota, just in the last decade, they've sort of been that no man's land team, right? They've sort of like been drafting in the mid rounds.
Yeah.
And they've always like they've been good at drafting, but they haven't been drafting like the elite guys. And I guess Granlund was probably the best of the bunch.
Truly elite. Like,
yeah,
kind of just
a
rung below the.
Yeah, and so that's what everybody sort of figured a little bit when these guys are coming up. Like these guys, you know, they're all good prospects, but they're not like the Taylor Halls or Nathan MacKinnon type prospects. And yeah, this is what happens when these players turn. We talked a little bit of when the Niederreiter deal was made. When these guys get to about 25, teams sort of feel.
Oh, that was another one. Niederreiter. Sorry.
Yeah, Niederreiter and then Coyle, right? So these are like some of their core pieces and they've moved them out. And in an attempt to try and get younger, to get cheaper, they probably realize as well, like, if they continue to keep these guys, they're going to continue to sort of be in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe it is sort of time to.
It's like a culture shift. But then they went and re-signed Eric Staal today because there was talk about trading him. But he made it very clear he didn't want to go. And I think he has a no trade. And I think some of the other teams got turned off.
It's good value.
Trading for him. 3.25,
exactly.
I think, for 2 years.
Yeah, he's good value for him.
So that's actually, really good value.
But, you know, I think at the time of the Rask Niederreiter deal, like the jury was a little bit out on Niederreiter. And he sort of like tore it up over the last 6 weeks.
Yeah. He gets hot and cold, right? And season to season, too.
Yeah. Whereas Victor Rask has been he's been injured at times, I think, with the Wild. He hasn't been sort of in the lineup as much. So that was a bit of a tough blow. I think a lot of people thought as well with Charlie Coyle that it sort of yielded a little bit more than Ryan Donato.
Yeah.
But reality with Coyle as well is like he's never really sort of panned out to be.
He hasn't. They traded Brent Burns for him.
Yeah. Like I think when you watch Coyle play, like he's big. He like he skates really well. You sort of think he's going to be more impactful player.
Like on paper, he looks good, right?
Yeah. So, and the fact is, I guess they soured on him as well. And I think with Granlund, he really, I think it's a bit sad. I remember the year that he's playing in the World Championships. He scored the goal behind the net goal. The Michigan type goal in the World Championships. There's so much hype for him coming into Minnesota. He sort of never really achieved the elite status, although he's been good. The last couple of years, he's been sort of a 60-70 point player.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing. It's like you look at a Stone, like in terms of offensive production, they're actually pretty similar.
Yeah.
And I admit that Stone, I haven't really like analyzed the defensive game and really watched his defensive game. So, you know, I'll take people's word for it that he's really like great defensively. But you think if Stone is getting this much hype and hoopla and Granlund still has term on his contract.
Yeah.
So just to get Fiala back.
Well, I think he's got one more year, Granlund. So next.
Well, that's
next
still
year.
Better than being just an outright UFA,
sure.
Right? So,
for sure.
And just getting Fiala, like who I think is a good young player for sure. But I think they Minnesota kind of decided they wanted this culture change. They're going to ship these guys out. But then they got like Rask back, who's not really contributing. Donato, I like, but, you know, he's actually been producing so far for them. But, you know, I like Donato, and he was really good at the end of last year. But Coyle, I feel like, is a bit of a better asset. Once again, they downgraded the asset. So you want to move on, fine. But it's almost like they rushed it in a way.
I agree, yeah.
And they took lesser value back just to get it done.
I agree. I think with all three players, like, they're betting, right? So with Rask, they're betting that he's going to break out.
Yeah.
With Donato as well, I guess they're hoping that he becomes more consistent and is more of a reliable player. And then with Fiala, like, last year he scored 23 goals, 24 goals. And the year before, he was also sort of projected to be this great player until he broke his leg, I guess. And then this year has just been a little bit disappointing. But I think they're putting the bet on him, right? They're like, yeah. They think, like, and that's the thing with the Minnesota Wild as well. Like, they probably realize, like, next year we're going to be in the exact same situation. And we're going to be in a situation where we're going to have to trade Mikael Granlund. So is Kevin Fiala the best that we could do? He's a young player. Fiala is like a 22-year-old. He's a first-rounder. Paul Fenton knows him well because Fenton was the assistant GM to Predators and probably felt like this is probably the best that I could do for Granlund. I think he probably should have, like,
fine if you believe in Fiala. I can totally respect that. But just from a pure value, perspective, you know, you got to get a pick in there as well because – I mean, I guess the cap saving is value that maybe we're not considering.
For sure.
I'm not considering. So, and kind of talking about Nashville and their other trade. So they added Granlund for Fiala, which I think was a big add. And then they added Wayne Simmonds from Philly, like, down to the wire. Like, this was after the deadline for Ryan Hartman and a conditional 2024th round pick. So Nashville, I think, I mean, I'm kind of surprised that I think if they win one round, it becomes a third round pick, which, you know, chances are they will win one round. So Nashville adds Wayne Simmonds and Mikael Granlund to their top six, top nine. I think that's a really impressive day.
Yeah,
they didn't give up that much. They gave up basically Fiala. I mean, they paid a lot for Hartman last year, which was, I think, a first rounder. It was kind of a shock. So I guess if you consider that, and then a third as well. And you add two guys who, at the very least, are your top nine, but very well could be their top six. And you add it to a core of Johansson, Forsberg, Arvidsson, and Turris.
Yeah.
I think they really solidified their top six. And then their other guy, they've always had like third line type players in Nashville.
They brought Brian Boyle in earlier as well.
Yeah,
he
Brian Boyle
against the Canadians last week.
Yeah, he's another big body, right?
Yeah.
So I think Nashville did well. They're one of the winners for me today because, you know, we all know about their vaunted defense. They have like two good goalies back there.
President Trophy goalie.
Yeah, although Rinne, implodes. Yeah. So that's probably a key. And,
you know,
I think Johansson and Turris, if you're matching up in the playoffs against most of the top teams, I would probably take the other team's centers over Johansson and Turris. So I think that's not necessarily a weakness, but it's not their strength necessarily.
Yeah, so Granlund reinforces that, right? Granlund can play
Their wings are even stronger now,
yeah.
So it might make up for it.
Yeah, so Granlund, like, some of the good things about Granlund are that he's versatile. Like, he can play center, he can play on the wing. And then one of the interesting things about the Predators this year is that they have actually one of the worst power plays in the NHL.
Yeah.
They're 30th or 31st. And so if you sort of put Wayne Simmonds in front of the net, you've got Granlund as a good power play player, sort of making passes, sort of give the power play a little bit more dimensions. Actually, I was just looking up Mikael Granlund, let's be clear, this year has 18 power play points. That would put him right now first amongst all national
players.
Oh,
really?
Players.
Which is surprising, right? Because they have the big bomb from Forsberg and Subban out there. And they have Josi on the point as well. And then Johansson's supposed to be good down low.
Yeah, they definitely have a great skill set. But it's just interesting.
Power plays just don't click sometimes, right?
Yeah.
It's not even about the time.
Oh, yeah. You're preaching to the choir here with Montreal Canadiens' 31st ranked power play.
Oh, wow.
That's
your defense? Regularly use defense?
Yeah. It's a totally different topic. But, you know, you've got Shea Weber at the point. You've got a creative player like Jonathan Drouin. You've got, you don't have as good shooters as Pacioretty or Galchenyuk. But, you know, there's no reason why we should be 31st in the league in the power play.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Okay, so, yeah, just a couple more. We can maybe touch in on the Habs after we get through a few more here. I think just a couple more kind of notable trades. One was Detroit traded Gustav Nyquist to the San Jose Sharks for a 2019 second round pick and a conditional 2020 third round pick. Detroit, there was much speculated he's a UFA, so they traded him, so that was probably smart on their part. I would have thought they could have gotten more,
yeah.
Especially, you know, but because Nyquist has been, you know, one of the top players, offensive players in the league this year, in my opinion, at least, you know, top 70, top 80 type guy this year. He's having a career year.
Yeah, he's got 49 points in 62 games.
Yeah, so he has a lot of chemistry, and he's, you know, been on heaters goal scoring wise when he broke into the league. And just San Jose is just so deep now. Like, their defense, they solidified in the offseason with Carlson. And they've added Nyquist. Like, their top nine is ridiculous. Meyer, Couture, Pavelski is top line. And then they have Evander Kane, who has almost 30 goals. He's having a career year. Hurdle is coming into his own. Donskoy. And then their third, quote-unquote, third line is Gustav Nyquist, Joe Thornton, and Kevin LeBanc. Yeah. Like, that is a pretty formidable. And then they have, of course, Burns and Carlson and Vlasic and Braun on the back end. I mean, Jones has been pretty bad. And I think some of these West teams, their goaltending is a question mark. But yeah, they've been letting in a lot of goals this year, Dell and Jones. So maybe that's their weakness. But I love this trade for San Jose, and they're kind of all in. And they make the most out of their picks that they do keep.
Absolutely.
With Meyer and Hurdle. And they got Donskoy as like a free agent from Europe, and LeBanc is a college free agent. They make the most. Barkley Goodrow, I think, was a college free agent. Melker Carlson, another signing from the Europe. So they keep that core together, and they can keep guys. They can make trades like this because they're going to have a good chance to keep them for a reasonable deal because of the organization they've built.
Yeah, I think that's a great deal. Like, they didn't really have much to trade with this time, yet they still were able to get like one of the top point producers, which is pretty remarkable, right? Like, you sort of look at the assets that they gave up for Evander Kane, look at the assets they gave up for Carlson, and yet they're still able to pull off a third move like this. I think that sort of shows, like, Doug Wilson, you know, that's the thing. Like, I remember, like, even 10 years ago, he's pulling moves off like this, right?
Yeah.
And they keep replenishing their system with just sort of savvy pickups, like Jonas Donskoy, like you're mentioning. I think it's a great pickup. Nyquist, they didn't have to give up a first rounder. They didn't have a first rounder, I guess.
Yeah.
They got a proven scorer. And I think, especially in that first round, or in, you know, not even just the first round, the rest of the playoffs, where they're going to come up against, you know, wagon teams, it's going to, like, having an extra goal scorer like that is going to be huge. So,
yeah,
I think it's a great pickup. And I think with the Red Wings, the disappointing thing is, I'm sure their fans probably would have been like, well, like, why are we giving up one of our best offensive players and not getting a first round pick? Mm-hmm. But I kind of do wonder whether Nyquist is one of those guys that will re-sign in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Afterwards.
Sort of,
yeah, I mean, who knows? Like, some of these moves are made, you think guys are going to re-sign. But mm-hmm. I think once you sort of taste success with another team, the chapter sort of closes.
And I think the California allure as well. And, you know, as I said, this organization, when they were, like, they traded for Joe Thornton way back when, and they've kept him all this time.
Yeah.
Evander Kane, they traded for him. They kept him all this time.
Yeah, and Eric Carlson.
Carlson, we'll see, right? But they can take those risks that other organizations can't. So, yeah, just a couple more trades that I thought were notable. One of them actually happened yesterday. Buffalo traded Brendan Goulet and a conditional 2019 first-round pick to Anaheim for Brandon Montour. So I thought that was an interesting move by Buffalo to get Montour when they already have Dahlin and they have Rasmus Ristolainen. So now they've added a third offensive defenseman, and they have Lawrence Pilot, who's in the minors, who's recently sent down, got a taste in the NHL. So they are getting kind of those four offensive defensemen, and Dahlin can play that two-way game, and arguably Ristolainen as well. So I think it's an interesting move. I think Goulet had some, you know, prospect shine as well. And a first-round pick is somewhat steep, I think. But Montour has the potential. And it's interesting how in Anaheim, you know, as soon as Bob Murray, the GM, took over as coach, Montour's ice time just cratered. And so it's pretty clear. It's kind of interesting. You don't see the GM-coach situation in the NHL much. Maybe Lou Lamoriello sometimes. But you can very clearly see, like, the opinion of the GM based on the, you know, the lineup and the ice time that he's giving, which you don't usually get that sneak peek, right? So, yeah, like, who do you think kind of came out on top on that deal?
Well, it's an interesting deal because I think Buffalo, I don't know realistically whether they're going to – are they still even in the playoff race? I think this is a move more so
made for – he does have some term as well.
Yeah, so I think this is a move more so made for future years. And I think it's a good move for the Sabres. So they've really sort of loaded up on offensive defensemen, but I think that's sort of the way the game's going, right?
Yeah. And I think Montour takes a ton of shots. So
yeah, and I think the way the Sabres have been, they've been sort of like top heavy, even though they've got Rasmus Dahlin and Ristolainen. You know, they're otherwise fairly thin defensively.
Yeah.
So I think I think this is more so a move for next year and subsequent years to sort of bring a little bit more balance into the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing with the Sabres as well. They had three first rounders. They had a first rounder for Ryan O'Reilly. They had a first rounder from Evander Kane. And then mm-hmm. they had their own. So I think they sort of had some chips to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're going to be able to get a defenseman that can sort of be top four for a first rounder, that's mm-hmm. pretty good return. I'm not too sure about this Gouley guy. But I think given what we know about Montour, it's a reasonable bet, although I don't think it's going to get them into the playoffs this year. They actually lost, as we're recording this, to the Leafs tonight, and they're still 6 points back the Carolina Hurricanes, which is a bit of a hill to climb. So, yeah, I think it's more sort of intended for subsequent years.
Yeah, so just one last trade that kind of caught my eye was just Colorado adding Derek Brassard. They also got a 2020 sixth round pick that's conditional, and they basically just only gave up a 2020 third round pick. So not a high price at all. And Brassard was acquired by the Penguins last year for the stretch run. Didn't really work out, didn't really contribute on the third line there. And Colorado's kind of starving for second line or really any secondary scoring past their top behemoth line that they have here. So I think it's a decent trade. Brassard, when he's put in that 2C role, he has tended to produce, but it's kind of interesting that Ottawa traded my boy Mika Zibanejad when he was still very young, and now he's a point-of-game player, first-line center for the New York Rangers for Derek Brassard, and now look how far Derek Brassard has fallen, going for a third-round pick. I guess you could say, you know, Brassard helped him get to the conference finals, so it was worth it. I don't know. I think Mika's going to be a stud for the next decade, and it kind of makes me feel good that the Sens got burned on that one for giving up on my boy there. So what do you think about Brassard in Colorado? Could he have a renaissance? He's getting up there in age as well.
Yeah, so Derek Brassard is 31 years old right now. And he's sort of been declining. So he's on his fourth team in the last year. Started in Ottawa, then he's in Pittsburgh and Florida, now Colorado. This year in Pittsburgh, only put up 15 points in 40 games. I don't know. I think if that many teams have sort of like put him through the ringer, this is one of those moves that you look back on the summer, it's like,
it's a nothing. Yeah. I think a third is kind of like pretty borderline there. So, I think those are all the trades we kind of chat about. So we'll chat a bit more about the kind of landscape now. So JD, those are the trades that, kind of caught my eye, all the major ones. There's a lot of minor ones, but yeah, the landscape in the NHL now, may have changed, but I just wanted to quickly get your take on how the Habs, did in trade deadline. Didn't really make any moves.
We got Canadians acquired Jordan Wheel from the Arizona Coyotes. Michael Chaput.
Oh, for Michael Chaput. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My bad. I missed that one.
I think Canadians.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. No, it's not a big deal. But, the Canadians this year have obviously overachieved. If you listen to any of the preseason podcasts, we're quite down on the Canadians.
Yeah.
And they've actually sort of overexceeded all expectations. And we know that the Canadians have a lot of prospects. We saw them at the World Juniors. And so, reality is, like we've been saying all year, Canadians are not going to win the Stanley Cup. And so you've got a wealth of prospects. It's hard to give up. Like, for instance, if the Canadians get a third-round pick for Derek Brassard, is that really going to move the needle for the Canadians?
No.
No. I think, overall, they probably could have used another defenseman. So the Canadians tonight were playing the New Jersey Devils. They lost. Apparently, Victor Mete and Shea Weber sort of had a rough game. I think they could have gotten another defenseman, ideally, to try and help support them.
The Mark Stone talk?
Yeah, to the Canadians?
Yeah.
No. I think the cost would have been prohibitive, right? It would have been a first rounder
And a Romanov.
Would
you give him up a Romanov and a first for a Stone? And then he gets $9.5 million. Can they even afford that in their salary structure?
Yeah. Well, Canadians actually have a lot of cap space
going
forward. But yeah, they will have to make some decisions on some of their younger players like Kotkaniemi in a couple of years. But no, I think the Canadians probably did the right thing by not being overly aggressive. They didn't trade any of their prospects, didn't trade any of their picks. I'm kind of glad that they didn't give up anything for players like Derek Brassard. I saw Nate Beaulieu, for instance, went for a sixth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I think the guys that they have playing for the Canadians right now are it would have been a lateral move at best to get like an Nate Beaulieu, mm-hmm. and you would have had to give up draft picks, mm-hmm. which I wasn't so keen to do. So Canadians got Jordan Weal to play on the fourth line. The fourth line, the way the Canadians play right now is like really sort of very aggressive. Like they want all of their lines to sort of forecheck really hard, mm-hmm. Put pressure on opposing defensemen. And to do that, you need to have all four lines skating. And so their fourth line has been in a state of flux over the last week. They brought in Nate Thompson, they brought in Dale Weiss, and now they brought in Jordan Weal. And I think they just hope that these guys can play at the NHL level without getting caved in, and allow the Canadians to continue to be dogged on the puck. But yeah, I think it was probably the right move.
So do you think Bergevin's learned his lesson? Because this is an about face from Bergevin looking back years ago where he basically was trading at the deadline and he's trading futures, and maybe he's learned his lesson and not to go for it. Or does he just not think they have a true shot at winning this year?
No, I think he's realistic, right? Like, I don't think any of the star players Canadians would have I don't think any of the star players really would have put Canadians over the top this year. Like getting Mark Stone, is that going to make the Canadians a cup contender? I don't think so. And in fact, I'd probably like say that because he plays wing, I'd prefer if he was a centerman, maybe the Canadians would have been more aggressive trying to pursue him.
How about a Duchesne then?
Yeah, so actually I think Bergevin today was asked whether he pursued Duchesne. Mm-hmm. The cost would have been prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bergevin clearly feels that the young players that they have right now are worth protecting. And I don't think that's the wrong philosophy to take. I think most Canadians fans would probably say that, the right course of action was taken. And I think especially given that the Canadians seem to be sort of on the brink and they lost tonight to New Jersey Devils, and there's some concern now whether they're going to have enough in the next 19 games to make the playoffs. And if they don't make the playoffs, then, it was a fun ride, but it's not the end of the world, right? I think there's a lot of good pieces to look forward to for next year. And, that's the way we build teams in the NHL now.
Yeah, I definitely think the Habs are in a building stage and they made the right call to just kind of go with the course, because Kotkaniemi is just a rookie right now. And would you agree that for the next time the Habs will be a contender, that will be when Kotkaniemi is far and away their best player?
Yeah.
And I think being the fact he's a rookie, he's probably a few years away. So I think it's smart to just build, continue building, keep those picks. I think it would have been a travesty to trade a guy like Romanov, who we, wax poetic about at the World Juniors, really like his game. Yeah, guys like Suzuki and Paling.
Yeah, that would have been a hard.
Yeah, like you got to keep those guys, I think. And they're building something special, so to speak, in Montreal. Right. So, yeah, just kind of talking about the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, so let me ask you, I've seen a lot of Oilers fans be like, why are they holding on to these plugs? Zach Cassian, they're holding on to Alex Chiasson, who's on this unsustainable run. They're holding on to...
Yeah, he has 17 goals. Matt, this is Benning. An amazing thing. They have 17 goals.
You do wonder, if these guys would have had any value on the market. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, I see kind of different sides of the coin, because all year long and before the year, we've just been bemoaning the fact that we don't have any wingers. We don't have, any really forwards up front outside of the big three. So then for us to trade away from, and I know that, getting a draft pick and stuff would be good, and getting a better position would be good. So what do you need them for? But we've been down that path. We got to keep playing to win games, even if we're kind of out of it. So I do see that perspective. But I mean, Chiasson, if you want to keep him, then get him signed to a reasonable deal, something that's a fair deal. Don't really go out of your shorts just to sign him. But Cassian, I don't understand why they say, oh, Cassian, they're not. I saw so many tweets from Rashog and Matheson that Cassian, they like Cassian, because he's been playing with Connor McDavid for the last 10 games, and all of a sudden he looks amazing.
Yeah,
like,
it's
come
ridiculous.
On, Zach Cassie's a fourth line player.
It's ridiculous.
If we can get a third round pick for the guy, we got to cash in here. Like, it's, I think they start to fall in love with these players when they're riding a high. It's a classic, like, buy low, sell high. They do the complete opposite. But whenever somebody's playing well, and it's like they're traditionally, and the history in the NHL is that the guy's a fourth liner.
Yeah.
So maybe he's having a bit of a, you know, a good stretch. And then people keep emphasizing, oh, Cassian's a guy that you really want to have in the playoffs because he's a big body and he has speed. And it's like, we've been in the playoffs 1 year out of the last 12. Like, this is not our problem. Like, this is not – that's a contender problem.
Yeah.
To have that we don't have.
Does Cassian have another year on his contract?
I think he's got at least another year.
So,
yeah, but
yeah, and he's – honestly, if you've got guys on your third and fourth line that play, like, sub 10 minutes that that, you know, just sort of skate up and down and don't really do much else beyond the placement level, and that actually are making money against your salary cap, you have to try to move those guys out.
I agree.
Because there's entry-level players that will do that job. And so even just the fact that you get relief on your cap, I would take a draft pick for.
Yeah, Chiesan, like, it was a good signing. It worked out. Let's cash in, right? Like, let's not give this guy a long-term deal. The guy's bounced around the league. He was in Ottawa. He's in Calgary. I mean, you could have gotten something, I would think. He won the cup last year with Washington. He didn't necessarily play an integral role, but he's a depth guy that, you know, some teams added tons of depth guys, even for a third round, fourth round pick.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, like last year, Devontae Smith-Pelly scored 7 goals in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, he was
waived and he got unclaimed, right?
Yeah.
So I think that might show you some of the value of a guy like Cassian, who still has another year on his deal.
Yeah.
And Alex Chiasson, maybe teams were like, it's not worth the 6th round pick. Well, I don't know.
But why are they having their mouthpieces on Twitter being like, oh, they really like Cassian, so they want to trade him. And the other thing I saw that, you know, they were kind of in discussions to try to get Connor Brown from the Leafs for a Matt Benning type thing, which I would have really liked to see because, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Benning. He doesn't really give you an edge anywhere. Like, he's not giving you an edge on offense or D. And we, you know, traded a 3rd round pick, which seeing like what Simmons went for and some of the other deals, I would have wished we would have traded for a Simmons or a Johansson earlier in the year with that 3rd round pick instead of burning it on a Petrovic, who's being like on the pine.
Yeah, I think the tough thing
the
with
time
that
we got
though,
him.
Is that
so trade Benning, put Petrovic in, get the value out of that deal, and Connor Brown is a guy that Connor McDavid should know. He was a former Erie Otter. At least he has a smidgen of offensive upside. You telling me he can't produce as well as Chiasson if he's playing with Leon and with Connor? So that might maybe a bit of a missed opportunity. But at the same time, I think the big story for the Oilers is not trading Jesse Puljujärvi, who I'm a big fan of. I think he's just been miscast and, he's still very young. So let's ride it out. I'm kind of disappointed he's not going to be going down to the AHL. But maybe now is not the time to trade a guy like that anyway. But
yeah, sounds like you're relieved. So what's going to happen with him this year? Is he going to go down?
I don't know. I think that, unfortunately, it seems like the player is starting to get a bit of an attitude about the situation, and that might hinder things developing. And, you know, part of me can't blame him, but at the same time, you know, he hasn't really, like, earned his keep and knocked down the door either. So I think it would have been nice if he would have gone down to the AHL and joined the atmosphere that the Condors have with this historic winning streak that they have of 16 games in the AHL, and they have a great atmosphere. I don't know why he doesn't want to go down there. But, you know, because he was a former 4th overall pick, right? And it's gotten to his head, unfortunately. But I don't know what's going to happen. A lot depends on who's going to be the GM. And that's another part of this, is that Oilers media are starting to kind of speculate that Keith Gretzky's, like, doing a good job. Basically, he's doing nothing, which is better what Chiarelli was doing. And now he's earned the job. So,
So he's a long-term.
Yeah, I guess Matheson was waxing poetic about Gretzky and how he's going about his business. I guess the Sam Gagner trade is, really making a difference for them.
Oh,
and it's just kind of sad that it's going to go down that path. But yeah, that's kind of the nutshell for the Oilers. So, JD, trade deadline has come and gone, and looking at the landscape in the NHL with most teams at about 60 games played, so there's about 22 games left. I mean, to me, looking at the standings, and that we all know the top teams, but a team that you mentioned didn't do anything today, Tampa Bay, I think it's still the cream of the crop in the NHL.
Absolutely.
They're loaded top to bottom. Like, they could have guys go down and have other guys step up. They have, always had a good farm system. So I think Tampa Bay didn't need to do anything, because, like, last year they added McDonough, which was a big need for them. Their defense is deep. Their forwards are deep. They have one of the best goalies in the world in Vasilevsky. He doesn't seem to be burning out like he was last year. So he's adjusted to the workload that he had as a starter now. But they have 98 points.
Yeah, it's like the next team has 81
in the East is the next guy, not the next team, Boston. And then 85, unfortunately, Calgary. Like, they're just blowing away the league right now.
So they could, like, actually just sit fast. Like, play Louis Domingue as their backup.
Yeah.
So, yeah, play Domingue, like, two of every three games down the stretch, and then just rest Vasilevsky, because he's sort of like, he has sort of complained that he's tired out over the last couple of years. So may not be a bad strategy for Tampa to pursue that as the season goes on. Like, it's just astonishing, like, the streaks that they put together. 98 points already, and they're just totally running away with it. But I think the next question you're going to ask is, like, who do you think are the winners of this trade deadline, and who do you think has really gotten ahead?
Yeah, like, I think Nashville, with the two additions that they made with Granlund and Simmons, they've kind of put themselves ahead. I think they're a winner in this trade deadline for sure. I don't know if Winnipeg is such a winner. I think they got what they needed, a second line center in Hayes. So if he does the job, I think they're a winner.
I think Winnipeg, Nashville, and San Jose, like, clearly have all, and Vegas, right? They got the best player in Stone. Like, it's an arms race, and I think all of them have reinforced, and like, a couple of those teams are going to lose early, and it's going to be extremely disappointing, because they all have contending type teams, right?
Yeah, and look, can we say Ottawa's a winner? Because I think they did what they needed to do. They got some good assets. You know, you could argue maybe they should have got a little bit more, maybe a better prospect for Duchesne, given what they gave up for him. But I think Ottawa, like, they got a blue chip elite level prospect in Brännström, which I think was a big add. San Jose, they just keep adding depth. I think they're one of the winners in this. So yeah, I think some of the losers. So who are some of the losers for you?
It's hard to say losers, because I think trade deadline is a little bit overrated in terms of, like, winners and losers. I mean, Calgary is kind of interesting because, you know, they've been the best team in the West this year, and they sort of see all the other teams around them that are sort of competing for that title, especially in their own division, with San Jose and Vegas really reinforcing. Mm-hmm. I guess Calgary didn't really make any major moves. They did acquire a couple pieces, I think. But nothing that really sort of moves the needle for them.
No, and, like, the James Neal bet that they made hasn't paid off. So there was speculation they were going to try to go after a Stone to make up for that. But I think their major problem, and I take great pleasure in saying that their goaltending is terrible.
Yeah.
And, Mike Smith runs very hot and cold. So I think, you know, Calgary really didn't do anything here. Which, you know, I think Trey Living I've criticized for being a bit trigger happy over the years too. So. But Calgary didn't really reinforce what they have. They're currently sitting first in the West, and the teams around them did bolster. So yeah. I think Calgary might be considered a loser.
Would you
this.
Consider Minnesota a loser, considering young players, but young players with a lot of question marks in terms of Fiala, in terms of Donato, and then going back 6 weeks?
Yeah, I definitely think Minnesota, like, as I mentioned, in all three of those kind of lifetime deal, like those kind of long-term deals that they made to get rid of Niederreiter, Coyle, Granlund, those poster childs, they lost on talent all along the way. So I definitely thought they were kind of losers in this. Pittsburgh seems like a bit of a loser in getting good Branson. We didn't really talk about that deal, but they didn't really add too much. And their window very much is still open. And Crystal Tang just got injured the other day. I don't know how serious it was, but
yeah.
It looked like another upper body.
Pittsburgh has done a job previously with recycling.
They usually add people,
teams.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, they're probably up against the cap as well, so their maneuverability is compromised.
Yeah.
But
Columbus is a loser?
You think they're a loser?
I think Columbus is a loser.
Well, I think they're probably, because they're boom bust, they're probably...
It depends, really, yeah, like how it goes, right? Like, but I think even if they do well, they win a round and these guys leave. To me, it depends on if these guys stay. And I don't think they, like, at least Panarin and Bobrovsky will. Otherwise, like, they probably would have signed already.
You know what, though? I think in life, you sort of have to be courageous, bold, take some risks.
Yeah.
And especially for a team that's never won a playoff series, for a market that really is not, it's sort of been the butt of a lot of jokes. Take your swing. You know, this is why they play the games. And, you know, you might whiff hard on it, but I think just given everything Columbus has been through, that risk is, you can sort of justify it. And I think I would justify it that way.
So do you think a team like the Islanders is a bit of a loser here? Because they have some free agents coming up like Anders Lee and Jordan Eberle, and they've overperformed. So we look at a team like the Rangers, they're not, you know, believing the mirage of their season and they're doing, quote unquote, the right thing. By trading their UFAs. I don't think anybody expected them to trade those guys, but at least they have a good chance of re-signing them. But they didn't do anything to bolster, and they're one of the good teams. So.
Well, I think the Islanders are kind of like the Canadians. Like, they've totally overachieved. They've got some good prospects. They've got their draft picks still. Just ride the wave.
But they could have moved to Dobson Dobson is, I don't think he is, but he's considered on a Branstrom type level. They could have got a Stone potentially.
Yeah, but just ride the wave. Like, a lot of people say, like, their analytics are sort of suggest that they're not a legit contender. They've sort of been riding goaltenders running, playing at like 940, 930
yeah.
save percentages. I think, you know, just play the games. If you win them, great. But don't have, you know, don't blow your future just because where you are in the standings on this particular day.
Yeah, I think we got to call Dallas a bit of a loser just based on the circumstance of Zuccarello, the one guy that they added, they counted on, just, you know, unlucky.
He got injured. Yeah. And then you sort of wonder if they miss the playoffs, whether they just blow the whole thing up.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was an interesting trade deadline. I agree. I think it's a bit overrated, and maybe some of these deals won't have as big of an impact as we're being told on the broadcast networks in this country, but it's always fun and intriguing to kind of think about the new line combinations and who's going to get a shot where. I, for one, my top thing I'm watching for is to see if Branstrom gets a shot with Ottawa and see how he does in the NHL, because I'm a big fan of his. But yeah, what's the one kind of thing you're going to watch for?
Well, other than Jordan Wheel playing with Nick DeLuca.
Yeah, other than that. That one's obvious. That's obvious. We're all going to be watching that one.
Yeah, I think, for me, like, as a, watching the Eastern Conference closely, Columbus is going to be the most intriguing team.
Right? Yeah.
And especially with my team, the Canadiens, sort of in that same point bracket with the Jackets. It'll be interesting to see whether they actually take off or whether it just sort of adds more pressure and whether they crumble as a result.
Yeah.
It's really truly boom and bust. And I think that's really what the most exciting, it's definitely going to be the most intriguing situation to watch for me.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good one. It'll be fun either way. If you're cheering for them, against them, it'll be intriguing nonetheless. And that's our recap of the trade deadline 2019. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.